What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another edition of Meet Me at Mutual, the first of our fourth season. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the Bat, at C70 on Twitter, and tonight I am outnumbered by the Redbird Daily guys. We have obviously Alan Medlock, a Medlock one on Twitter who is here every week, but we also have Adam Butler joining us tonight. Adam, who is Lance Dance 1, right? On Twitter?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so, but I didn't look it up beforehand because I don't want to be prepared when I do these things. Adam is going to be one of the three Cardinal bloggers that are going to cover the winter warm-up, which starts tomorrow. Today, probably by the time you actually listen to this show. I wanted to get him on and talk a little bit about that and everything that's going on in relation. But before we get into that, the Cardinals made a little bit of news, mainly because the fact that there is such a cold stove right now that any little ember counts as news. They settled with all their arbitration guys today. 1-year deals for everybody, Waka, Lyons, Zuna, and who am I forgetting? Grichuk. Grichuk, that was the other one.
Yeah.
1-year deals, nothing major. I guess $9 million for Ozuna was the biggest contract. Adam, you're the guest. We'll let you go first. Any thoughts on these things?
It's about what you expected, really. It's just nice that it got done, especially with Ozuna, the brand new outfielder. You don't want to have to take him to arbitration and sit at a table and tell him why he doesn't deserve the money he wants. So I'm glad they got that done. I mean, other than that, I don't think it's terribly big news, but it's just nice to see, really.
Alan, go on.
No, it was funny. I take a lot of pride in them not going to any hearings with the guys. So that's why it was kind of disappointing last year when they decided to do it. Now I didn't know if that was going to be something that was going to be a year-to-year thing, how they're going to do the file and trial, whichever team's saying they believe in doing now. So I was glad to do it. But, yeah, I was surprised, not necessarily about Ozuna. I completely agree with you, Adam, on that, that it was good to do it right away. I was surprised by the number a little bit. I thought it would easily be double digits. I was kind of surprised that it ended at 9.
Yeah, I didn't even realize, and I'll be honest, I didn't even realize it was arbitration. You know, when we've talked about Ozuna coming and we said he was, under control till 19, I just kind of thought he was already under contract. I wasn't even thinking that he was arbitration eligible. To get him for $9 million, I think is a nice deal. I mean, not that the Cardinals needed to save the money or anything, but, I guess every little bit helps.
It's also nice too, because if, at $9 million, if he goes out and even if he has another season like his 2017, you're probably only looking at maybe $16 million tops for him next year or in 2019 at least. So I think it sets him up pretty well for the rest of, his time here.
I would have liked to have gone back and I know that we can get a little too deep into this, but he did, he's a gold glove and a silver slugger winner and 38 home runs. And you're just like, you're thinking, man, that's a heck of a bargain. And I wonder if that's ever happened before or if this is kind of comparable to how it was. I mean, who was it? Davis got almost 11. Chris Davis in Oakland, I think it was almost got 11. There was somebody else. Well, the Donaldson blew it out of the water, but that's bound to happen. But I honestly thought with Ozuna's, I thought it would maybe kind of be in the middle of that. I was thinking it would be easily be in double figures. I was surprised. I kind of would like to go back to see if that's comparable to things that had, a player of that season how comparable it has been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's always tough to know these things because they do change from year to year, and depending on which team's involved and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I felt like it's a pretty good deal too. Adam, I mean, again, all these are 1 year deals. Did that make sense for all these guys? I mean, obviously Ozuna you would like to lock down, but that's not going to happen. But, you know, Grichuk, Waka, Lyons, are these guys that they should be going year to year with, or should they have tried to, you know, maybe get a 2 or 3 year deal out of one of them?
I think the one I'd kind of like to see them, sign longer term is Lyons, really. I can't remember how many years he has left in arbitration.
This is his first year in arbitration.
His first one, yeah. Yeah, so they still have time to do that. I guess they can wait. With Waka, it seems like their entire rotation, they like to be, well, at least they're moving to the point where they like to be flexible, you know, 2 to 3 years out with everybody, with the depth of starting pitching prospects that they have. And Grichuk, with, you know, he's your fourth outfielder right now. I don't know how you can really commit to him long term, because fourth outfielders are replaceable. So I mean, I think it makes sense for the most part. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you'd like to get Ozuna long term, but I think it was Gould saying it really just doesn't make sense for either side, because he's going to be looking to make big money. And for the Cardinals, you definitely want to see him in your uniform before you lock him up like that, probably.
Well, and I think there's got to be some relationship there, too. I mean, you know, even if he was, you know, almost a can't miss, which he's not necessarily, but even if he was, you'd still need the time to get to know him, get to know his situation, for him to get to know you. And you know, at best, I would say, even at best case scenario, you're looking at, you know, 6 months or 3 to 6 months, you know, building that relationship before you could even talk about it. So, you're right. I mean, it just doesn't make sense for either side to try to do that. You know, maybe this time next year, but then Ozuna, depending on how much he values his free agency, I guess is the deal there. But, you know, obviously, being,
you got to keep in mind he's also a Boris client.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a big deal. I don't think anybody's ever expecting to re-sign a Boris client. It does happen. Steven Strasburg did it last year, blew everybody away, I think. So
yeah.
But very rarely are they not going to reach the market. That being said, if the market continues to be like it is this year, some of these guys may want to try to sign a little earlier and not go through this whole thing. You know, I'm a guy, obviously, that's a big fan of Lyons, but as I put out on Twitter and I told Alan today, the track record they have with extensions or signing guys or even bringing guys in that have multiple years as relievers has not been good. You know, they signed Jason Mott, he goes and gets Tommy John surgery. They, you know, they trade for, Zach Duke because he has that extra year, he winds up with Tommy John surgery. Then they gave Jonathan Broxton a 2 year deal, but that made no sense to start with. I guess as a fan of Lyons, I'm kind of glad they didn't, and hopefully he'll miss out on whatever reliever curse is going on with his team.
Yeah, hopefully so. I think it's, for me, it's just a personal thing. Like you would be locking him up right whenever he starts to, he just started to show his signs of dominance. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you're confident in him, that's, you know, a lot of times the time to pounce, but you are right. Relievers are so volatile that, you know, I can see where there's still a lot of risk in it if they were to lock him up.
Yeah. And like you said, first year of arbitration, they've got time to do that if they want to. If he comes out and has another solid year this year out of the bullpen, they very well may try to buy out at least the last year of his arbitration. He's a little bit older too, I think. I mean, not older, but he had some back and forth. He's been up and down. So his service time is not where it could be for some others. So, Alan, anything else on these? I mean, like I said, it's the only nugget of news we've really had for a while.
Yeah.
There's still not a whole lot to it.
Exactly. And I mean, I completely agree with both of you in that situation. The only one I really thought there was any consideration on, and I think that was, you know, the wide thought of the Cardinal fan base was it could have been Lions, but for every reason you guys had said, I mean, that wasn't going to happen either. So yeah, in complete agreement.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this weekend then. This is kind of the kickoff weekend, for the season to some degree. I mean, you know, it won't be long. You know, we're looking at just under a month, after the warm up is done before spring training starts. A lot of times, and and we'll get to this later on, a lot of times, you know, everything's kind of done. We kind of know what the team's going to look like by the time we get to this part where they all come through and talk about their winter and what they're looking forward to do this season. Not completely done this year, but, Adam, I mean, you're going tomorrow. You're going to be part of the media press, if you will, the scrum, the guys they just love to talk to. What are you looking for? What are you wanting to hear out of these players starting tomorrow?
I think I just want to get a little bit clearer message on sort of, I'm not sure how to say it, sort of just like where these guys are at and like, you know, like Miles Michaelis, you know, how I kind of want to listen to him and see how he expects his game to translate, you know, whether I'm kind of curious with him, whether, he would be open to relieving or if he's just locked in as a starter. Because if you look at their rotation, if they were to add a starter, mm-hmm. you know, the obvious guy out is probably, I mean, performance-wise, it's probably Wainwright, but we all know that's not going to happen. So you don't know what happens there if they were to add a starter in any capacity, really. And then I'm just excited to hear from guys like Reyes or even Wainwright and see how his health is. And it's just nice to hear from players again, really. You know, we've gone so long without really knowing what was going on or having any news. So, like, today might have been the busiest day of the offseason, really, with all the arbitration. I'm just excited to get baseball news again for the most part.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great point on Michaelis, though, because I've been thinking about that a lot, to where I do think they're going to be bargain hunting. Daniel and I have talked about this, you know, ad nauseum at this point. But I feel like anything they do now, I'm pretty confident in the team that they have now because then it allows them to upgrade if they needed to at some point. So I consider everything now as kind of like a luxury item. But if they were going to pick up some low-hanging fruit and it is a rotation piece, I wondered how that was going to work out because I was thinking, well, is there a situation to where they're going to sell it as a, you know, Weaver's going to need more time or we intended for Weaver to start in the bullpen this whole time anyway, which I don't think is a good fit. But I wondered about that. So I'm kind of curious to see because you would think that the contract wasn't of, I'm going as a starter. You would think the promise probably was there that he would have a good chance to start. So I don't know. That's a great way to look at that because I wondered how that situation would work out if they were indeed lucky enough to grab a starter at this point and who would fall out of the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, you might take it into spring. I mean, it's one of those things. You should get all the pieces and see what it looks like. And, you know, if Weaver struggles or whatever, you can send him down or, you know, then maybe you do talk about Walker Swift shifting to the bullpen, even though that's not a conversation that the Cardinals seem to want to have. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be one that they did, but you're right. Michaelis could be one of those guys as well. And, you know, you're paying him, was it $30 million or something like that? I don't remember the numbers exactly. But he's coming from Japan. He's getting a pay raise. He's probably, he's going to tell you at least. He'll do whatever the team wants him to do. But that would be an interesting thing. And I don't know, I mean, his MLB experience is in relief, but he hasn't done that in a while. It'd be interesting to know if he's, you know, if it's a mindset thing that he needs to, if he's ready for that, or if that's something he'd have to prepare for, like in spring training or not.
Yeah, that's another interesting part of it too, is because he led that league in innings, I believe.
Yeah, he did.
And so,
wow.
I mean, that could be, I mean, that's a big plus to have in your rotation. So maybe that's what pushes Weaver if they were to sign somebody, and maybe that's the path of least resistance, I guess, which is something that they like to do.
Yeah,
that was the term that I was going to use as well. A lot of times they will do those things, and you know, in all honesty, these things usually have a way of working themselves out too. You know, someone will probably get hurt in spring training regardless. You know, it's one of those things, but I understand where we're going. The plan has to be there.
Exactly. I mean, you have to have at least enough. And you put, like I said, you throw enough at it and see what sticks. You know, I feel like it's already going to be one of those years where the rotation at the beginning of the year may look significantly different than the rotation at the end of the year. With Reyes being healthy, with, you know, who knows with Wainwright, you know, got a guy like Flaherty who, you know, may force his way into the picture at some point in time. And some other guys like Dakota Hudson, although he may show up as a reliever, and others like that, that rotation may be in flux some. And so, I don't know, but that's an interesting thought on Mikolas. I hadn't really given it, because I've had it in my mind, I think mainly because of the fact, like you said, he led the league in innings, and that's something the Cardinals really need right now, is somebody that can go out there and eat innings, which is, you know, again, you look back at the Mike Leake trade and you start thinking, you know, maybe, you know, you gave up a lot there, when you think about it in that regard. I mean, they weren't necessarily the best innings that you gave up, but they were still innings. And so I think he's probably a front runner, but it's not as locked in as, like, you know, Carlos Martinez or Adam Wainwright for different reasons.
Right. And another thing I'm curious about is, it's been mentioned a few times that the Tyler Lyons could be an option for the rotation. I don't understand that, which I guess that's probably more of a question for Mozeliak than Lyons, but that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I don't know about you guys, but like I get that he could probably start and do a good job.
Yeah.
And right now that would leave a hole for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without signing more relievers, I think he's got to be farther down on the list. Now, I was reading Derek Gould's chat this week, and he pointed out, you know, that that Lyons did develop well as a bullpen, but he also, it could easily be that he was just developing as a pitcher. It just happened to be that he was doing the bullpen. And, you know, I think he could be a very capable fifth starter. But I think you're right, Adam. I think he's more valuable in the bullpen in right now, when we're already talking about not having a ninth inning guy, trying to take your, you know, what might be your eighth inning guy out of the equation too, when you've got other options, seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, I mean, it's like, I think he would be a good starter. I mean, we've seen guys around the league do it. Like, the one that comes to mind is Danny Duffy in Kansas mm-hmm. City. Like, he was kind of a, if he starter, went to the bullpen and, you know, turned into somewhat of a dominant reliever and went back to the rotation, and now he's the top of the rotation starter. You know, that you could easily see that with Lyons, because he looks nasty now, but I mean, you got to have people in the bullpen too.
Yeah, unless they're going to do some, you know, wild and crazy, you know, thing, like everybody besides Carlos pitches like four innings, and then, you know, three or four innings, and they're just going to rotate players like that. Which probably wouldn't work very well, I don't think. But, I think there was a concept one time where you had like three pitchers set to go every day and they would each throw three innings. I don't think that would be, that's one of those things you try out in a baseball game, on the computer. I don't think it works very
yeah.
well in real life. Right. Alan, I mean, besides, you know, is there anything that you are looking for, or anything you want Adam to look for, out of this Warner warm-up coverage? What are you wanting to see when the players start talking to the media?
That's a big portion of it, is, you know, the bullpen type situations and the rotations. I would like for you to lay eyes on Ozuna and to see how he looks. You know, that's, cause I always thought, I hate to say this, cause let me preface it by saying, of the options they had this year in the offseason of the Marlins outfielders, Ozuna was third choice to me of who to get. The reason I say that is because I always felt like he had the body that could go south the quickest. But I guess he's in fantastic shape. So I would like to see just kind of get a rundown of what kind of a presence he lets off, you know, when he's there tomorrow. I'm pretty excited about that. I'd like to see Gregerson's enthusiasm about coming back. You know, I understand he just won a World Series ring, but I do kind of want to see how it will be having him back in the fold. He's somebody that we're kind of discounting a little bit, but if with the three things that they said they needed this offseason, they checked all those boxes really. You know, it's not the names that everybody wanted to hear, but they did it. They wanted a reliever with closing experience, which we've heard that. Gregerson has it, and I'm a big fan of the veteran bullpen guys that just know how to get guys out. So I'd kind of like to see his enthusiasm when he's back a little bit tomorrow as well.
Yeah, Wong,
not to cut you off. Wong, oh, I would like to see how I want to see how his mindset plays out. You know, his name was not brought up in any trade rumors, very little this off season, and you know, he's going to get a majority of the time at second. I want to see that how he may be bouncing around quite a bit this weekend. I'd like to see how that works out as well.
Yeah, so going back to Ozuna, if I remember correctly, what was it? It was 2015 maybe, whenever he came into camp out of shape, I think. That was the year he got sent down in the middle of the year, and I guess the front office was really unhappy with him. I remember there being a bunch of trade rumors.
Mm-hmm. That was my one knock about Ozuna, too, is the fact that at one point they were dying to get rid of him. You know, and that was what it was. I didn't remember if it was a weight issue or not, but I knew that he really fell out of favor there.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I hate to be wrong about that, but yeah.
Well, and there was some with him. It was him, right? That at least I think Boris was complaining because the Marlins were basically holding him down for eligibility issues too. I mean, there was some performance thoughts maybe, but I think they sent him down. At least it was taken for the fact that they were trying to slow his clock. You know, obviously he gave him the opening to do that, but it did sound, at least if I'm remembering correctly, it was one of those things that you didn't really expect any other team to do, but it's the Marlins, and you know how they are with finances and stuff like that. And again, I mean, and you know, everybody kind of delays their guys some, but it really felt like that was what they were doing, was trying. He was obviously prepared and ready to play in the majors, and they were holding back because, you know, arbitration and stuff.
That could have been. I don't remember it perfectly, but I definitely know that he was in trade rumors, and it seemed like a foregone conclusion that he was going to be traded at one point, and it just never happened. So yeah, I mean, that is something interesting that I really hadn't thought of. I'm glad you said that. I'll definitely be sure. I think he's there on Sunday. So
cool.
Yeah, be sure to look at that. And then yeah, Gregerson, I like the addition of him too. I just wish there was more.
I completely agree with that. No.
Were you gonna say something, Daniel?
No, although I mean, yeah, I'm kind of. You know, we continue to remember Gregerson. It'll be interesting to see what Gregerson says, and I haven't seen him say anything recently about coming back to the organization that drafted him. You know, just as on a personal note, you know, coming back to here and never got a chance to play in St. Louis as a Cardinal, but now he does. But I kind of like it. I don't want him being the closer. I don't think, although I do think last year was a little bit of an aberration, and I think he's better than that. I think he's fine in the seventh or, you know, some eighth inning situations. But yeah, I think it's going to be kind of interesting. He's going to be, you know, coming back to the National League, what he thinks about that. And, he's a guy we haven't heard anything from. I mean, we haven't heard from any of these new additions, you know, like Ozuna, like Nicholas. We haven't heard much from them. I don't think they've necessarily had press conferences and stuff like that for these guys. So getting that first exposure to Cardinal Nation, if you will, and getting a chance to really hear from these guys and see what they're thinking. It's going to be kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. Go ahead, yeah, Alan.
I'm sure they were. I'm sure the rollout will be pretty big, at least for Ozuna. I would think for Gregson as well that they and I found it odd that they never did the press conferences. I don't know. You know, Ozuna may have been in the Dominican at that time. You know what I mean? Just not to come back, but I did find that a little bit odd.
Yeah, I don't know what the procedures are. I know some other teams didn't as well.
No.
You know, that was at winter meetings, and they weren't even. You know, they weren't even home, although they could have had one a couple days later. I think he probably was in the Dominican by then. You know, I just, and some are different. I still remember, I don't remember, I guess they had a press conference when they acquired, Hayward, but I remember him being, on stage at, Fox Sports Live over there, or whatever they call that thing, Ballpark Village Live or whatever. During winter warm-up, you know, had a, you know, it was televised press, you know, televised even, and he was, you know, talking with Dan and some of the others. You know, I don't know that they will do that kind of thing for Ozuna because it's a different situation and such, but, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, what his exposure is, this weekend, if it's just kind of limited to the signings and the press right there, or if he does some extra radio appearances or things like that, if he starts to get acclimated to a different baseball culture than what he's been used to.
I'll definitely be interested to see that. I do remember that Hayward, I don't remember an actual press conference for Hayward. Maybe they had one, but I do definitely remember them having that big thing at Ballpark Village.
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool. Yeah, I'd like to see them do something like that with Ozuna. Does Ozuna speak English? I have not seen any.
I was questioning that as well. I don't think it's fluent.
Right. I mean, I'm sure he does it to some extent, but I just didn't know if he would need a translator for the stuff, which could be part of it.
Which is a bit of a tangent, but I noticed Cardinal Gifts most of this winter has been asking about the translator. Yeah. And apparently she's not there. I mean, that's what he had heard from Hawkman, that she is no longer as part of the Cardinals. I assume that if they have another one, they have to have a Spanish translator. It's just interesting that, you know, she was there for, I guess, a year and does not appear to be. That's what's actually, it's going to be interesting to see who is doing the translating for, you know, Ozuna. And I know Carlos is, I think, you know, he's getting some of his English, but I think he's still more comfortable with the translator. I don't know who else, you know, maybe Eugene does Spanish too. I don't know. And they decided to keep Eugene around. I don't know.
Well, and personally, I think Gifts is, worried about how translation secondary to what he's truly interested in with her.
I don't know. Either that or he had heard something that, you know, it's always kind of interesting when people leave spots,
sure.
Especially when there's no obvious reason for them to, or when it's kind of quietly done. And I think there's probably some sort of story there. It may not be anything big, but yes, maybe he was just more interested in those interviews on TV. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She's an attractive lady.
Yes. Just giving you a hard time, Gifts. Don't worry about it. So, but anyway. So I think you're right. I think probably Ozuna is probably not. And so that, you know, that does cut into how you present the player, if you will. To the public, because there are situations that are different that you can't do as easily or it doesn't flow as well. Now, this would be an exceptional time, although I don't know that the Cardinals are going to do this, be an exceptional time to have, you know, Benji Molina and what's his partner, Paulo, I don't know exactly, but the ones that do the Spanish radio broadcasts on, you know, when they do them. you know, to do the do interviews with those for the Spanish radio or something of that nature, and you know, use that as a way to outreach to that section of the community. I don't know that that's what's going to happen. I'm pretty sure it's not. But it could be an interesting choice to do that and then market him maybe to that part even more than the traditional market.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's something I had never thought of. I will be really interested to see how they kind of, I don't know, show them off. It's not the right, that's not what I'm looking for, but you know what I'm
that's,
saying.
That's basically what you mean, though. I mean, there's probably a better term for it, but that's, you know, that's what they're going to do.
You would think he could very easily get his doors blown off in St. Louis as opposed to what he had in Miami for one of these. You know, I was thinking about that. I hope they pull out all the stops.
Yeah, like what do we get? Like one reasonably big acquisition a year and it's him. So yeah. I mean, that's what we've gotten. Everybody's excited about him right now.
Yeah, and that should be kind of the face of it right now. I mean, he and Carlos, you know, obviously you still got Yachty, you still have Adam Wainwright. But just for, you know, the faces you put on the tickets next year are the faces that are in your promotional materials for this weekend. He should be right there because, like you said, he's the big draw. Now I know he's supposed to be at the Writers' Dinner on Sunday night, picking up his Gold Glove and his Silver Slugger. And so there may be some promotion there as well. But I think you're right. I think it's gonna be interesting. Now, you know, again, this is gonna be different than Miami. It may not be that much different from, you know, the Dominican experience.
Sure.
You know, there's that too.
Yeah.
It's different. I mean, the passion obviously is there in the Dominican. It's different. It's a similar passion, but expressed a little bit differently in St. Louis and not expressed at all in Miami. But you know, that's just kind of the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be interesting to see what he thinks of, you know, all these fans showing up in the cold to, you know, just to get autographs for a guy that hasn't even played in front of them yet.
Yeah.
Adam, like you said, you're going to talk to Adam Wainwright. I know what Adam Wainwright's going to tell you, because that's what Adam Wainwright always says, you know, that he's perfectly fine and he's healthy and he's going to give it another run. But it's kind of interesting to see that Wainwright is acknowledging that, you know, this is the last year of his contract and it could be the last year of his career. He doesn't expect it to be. He doesn't want it to be. He's not planning on it to be. But he did, you know, he did say basically if he can't pitch better than he did last year, you know, this is it. Is that a line of questioning you expect that somebody or yourself will kind of get into tomorrow or either tomorrow or Sunday with him?
Oh, I would imagine that comes up. Yeah. I mean, it almost has to, right? You look at his comments in the past and you'd have heard him say, you know, he doesn't want to stick around and be average. And that almost feels like a company line. It feels like, you know, nobody wants to do that when they've been so great for so long, but it's starting to seem like he really takes that to heart. He's definitely, based on his comments, he's definitely not okay with the way he's performed last year at least. And, I hope he comes out and pitches well for sure. You know, that'd be one of the best things for Cardinal fans this year. I would imagine that comes up. I mean, that's probably between whether he's healthy, well, after whether he's healthy, that's probably the second biggest thing to talk about with him.
Yeah, I would think so. One thing I would like to know, you can put this on a question if you want it, but one thing I would like to know is that at the end of his career, whether it's this year, whether it's years in the future, if he is looking at broadcasting or if he wants to stay home with his family for a while, or if he wants to get into baseball as a coach or whatever. But it feels to me that Adam Wainwright is probably one of the more personable ones that we've had, a guy that could probably shift into at least the Fox Sports Midwest, you know, post-game and pre-game show without much trouble. I'm just kind of interested to know if maybe he would want to do that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good question. I mean, I don't remember who put it this week. It may have even been Gould about whenever he was done that he could pretty much have whatever job in the organization he wanted. It was, you know, that highly thought of. So yeah, I don't know. That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, heck, Mike Shannon's not going to be around forever if, you know, if he wants to do some radio or something of that nature. So, all right. Anything else winter warm-up-y, Alan, especially that you want to go through or Adam? I know you're just, Adam, especially probably kind of excited about getting to this tomorrow.
What is the schedule tomorrow?
I've got it right here. 1 second.
Okay.
So they don't actually give us like much of a schedule. We're basically, it looks like on the main stage they have a Q&A with Mo at 11. But as far as like interviews for media, we don't really know until it happens, but you can get kind of a general idea based on, who's signing that day. And tomorrow the notable ones are, Carson Kelly, Reyes, Brebbia, Dakota Hudson, Miles Michaelis, Carlos Martinez, Matt Bowman, Luke Voigt's on there, Sam Tuivailala, and Wong are the ones for tomorrow. So I would assume, you know, most, if not all of them, will be doing interviews tomorrow based on what I've heard as far as how it works. So that's some good ones for sure. I'm really intrigued by the Reyes interview.
I'm just going to want to see if Matt Bowman can still pick up a pen to write his name.
I'll let you know if he's signing one.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, like I say, Adam's going tomorrow for the Redbird Daily. We've also got Joe Schwartz going from Birds in the Black, and Kevin Reynolds is going from his site, STL Cards and stuff, and we look forward to all the posts and writing that we'll get out of these guys over the weekend and probably through the next week as they talk to players and front office types and all that kind of stuff. Before we get into our regular favorite Cardinal player section that we have been doing seemingly forever, but we will get to that in a minute. Let's just talk a little bit about what the Cardinals still need to do, or what they might actually do. Alan, you and I have talked, over, especially in the last show that we did, I think, about how the Cardinals are better, or we feel like they're better, than they were definitely better than they were for most of 2017. And I think they're still probably a little bit better than they were at the end of the year. But there are still a lot of question marks. If there's one thing left that they have to do, that you feel like they have to do between now and, well, at least opening day, hopefully early on in spring training, what is it?
The easiest answer on that is you can always fortify the bullpen. And I'm not even big on they have to get somebody that's gotta be labeled as the closer. I'm not even big on that because I think those bullpen pieces figure themselves out year after year. But I do think you have to get somebody established to get outs. I'm okay with just about anything else. I think that what I would like, and I just don't see it happening at this point unless something falls in their lap, I like the idea of lengthening the lineup by bringing in another bat. And not as necessarily, I'm a big Jericho guy, but even if it were, say, a Moustakas or a Morrison, what I like about bringing in either one of those is, man, you're pretty deep. If you've got Kelly, Martinez, Jericho, and Grichuk on the bench, that you're pretty good at that situation. I don't know if that's going to happen. I do think they're playing coy with some stuff that's going on that there because I think that they're shutting the doors. The KMOX interview made it sound like they were shutting the doors and they were ready to go with what they've got, which they probably are ready to go. That's fine. I get it. I mean, if it started today if spring training started today with this roster, I you would hear complaints, but it was more the guys that wanted a lot bigger names than what they've got. But I do think they've improved. That being said, I do think that there's so many guys out there, and there's almost not enough jobs where the bottom has to fall out of some of the markets. I can understand on a Moustakas deal to where that would kind of be the easy picking, because I think that he's going to be the one that probably sees the biggest drop, because there's not a lot of need for a third baseman, and there's a lot of questions about how good he's going to be going forward. But they're also, I think that they have plans 1, 2 to 3 years out of what options they're going to have at third base, be it DeYoung, be it to getting into Machado situation, or maybe getting in the Arenado situation in 2 years. I think that that may block them a little bit, which kind of leads me back to Morrison. And Adam, you've written about this already, but you just wonder if they're not going to add one of those bats if the market just forces them to, hey, we can get this luxury item at, you know, 75% of what the market figured he was going to be. So I don't know. I mean, that's what I would like to see him do. Those are the two areas. I am surprisingly okay with the rotation right now. I thought that if they were going to upgrade it, they needed to do it big. With it being, you know, your Archers, you know, in a trade like that. At this point right now, I hope they don't trade and it's somebody that they sign for the same reasons that I would like to see them sign one of those guys, because I think that you have the basis to be a really deep team. I think that you hit the nail on the head, because that was kind of my thinking too on the rotation in April and May probably doesn't look really similar to what it may look like in late August, September. And that's when your Flaherty will be ready. If he's not already up, you know, maybe they've made a move by then, but I'm pretty confident now that they'll keep their head above water. And I kind of expect a Wainwright bounce back, to be honest with you, because he has a lot to prove. So I think that they'll be pretty good. But to answer your question, a roundabout way to come full circle, I think another bullpen piece is what they desperately need, but I think there's some luxury items that they could get that would still help them improve.
Adam, what are you thinking?
I pretty much agree with all of that. I'm right there with you on the bullpen. It's kind of the same as the entire team was coming into the year. If you look at their bullpen right now, the overall numbers are probably going to be average or better. But they lack that late inning firepower, kind of like the entire team was average or better, but they lacked that sort of star power. I just view it the same way. And I think, I agree with you. I don't think they need that necessarily closer. I think they need the late inning arm to just add to everything. And, I almost feel like they have to add one, you know, I think Addison Reed does make a ton of sense. But even if it's a guy like Sergio Romo, who I'm personally really high on.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, in a perfect world, you get both, but I mean, I think that's definitely a way to go. And as you know, as far as the rotation in the lineup, I think they're both okay. I think they'll both be good enough to win. But yeah, for the lineup, they definitely lack left-handed power. And I'm big on the Morrison signing. I think if you can platoon him and Jerko, and then you know get Jerko some more at bats again, you know, at second base sometimes, I think you can be really strong. That adds, you know, the combination of those two in a platoon is one heck of a hitter. So I think that's a way, that's sort of a, like you said, a luxury item, but he doesn't cost that much, or at least he's not expected to. So I think that makes a ton of sense. And I'm personally pretty high on the rotation as a whole. You know, whenever you hear Mozeliak talk about it, he routinely says, depth. We have depth. He says it over and over. And that just keeps leading me to believe that they're going to sort of approach it in maybe a way not as extreme as the Dodgers did last year, but sort of that way where you have, I think they had nine pitchers start for them last year, and it was just constantly people in and out, you know, like as soon as someone starts to wear down, okay, take a step back. We've got a guy to step in for a couple starts. And I don't think they'll do it to that extreme by any means, but I think that's sort of the idea is, you know, you look at the guys they have and they have, you know, seven or eight capable guys. And maybe that's sort of what he means whenever he brings up Tyler Lyons is that he's going to just soak up some of these starter innings, you know, not necessarily be in the rotation ever, but so that's kind of maybe what I think about it. And that's hopefully what we can find out this weekend. But, you know, I do think that they'll probably add at least a starter in some capacity. It might just be a minor league deal with an invite to spring, or maybe someone falls to that. Maybe a guy like Trevor Cahill has nobody there for him, something along those lines. But for the most part, I think it's really the bullpen that's the most glaring need right now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I would like to have somebody I would feel more comfortable in the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got guys that maybe they can do it, and you got to realize that, you know, so, you know, for so much of the year last year, it was kind of up in the air anyway. It's probably going to be better anyway, no matter, even if they don't get anybody, it's probably better than it was last year, but maybe not by enough. Yeah, I think you're right. Addison Reed, you know, especially now, all you have to do is sign, pay the money, and go with that. The only problem I have with getting a guy like, you know, Morrison or anything that makes, we start talking about these super subs, like Carpenter is supposed to be, like Jerko would be in some of those situations. The only thing that worries me about that, and I'll be honest, is, you know, are they going to be used that way? We've seen Mike Matheny just continue to run out the same guys anyway. I could easily see Jed Jerkle getting buried on the bench. I could see Jed Jerkle taking over all the time at second base and letting Wallen get buried on the bench. I mean, things like that seem to happen. And especially when you've watched this offseason, and it seems like they're trying to make it easier and easier for Mike Matheny to do stuff. Even I saw the tweet, I think it was Derek Gould that said they were trying to get the bullpen to be, you know, paint by numbers. They've added in Maddox, who's supposed to have a lot more control over the pitching side of things. They've got guys like Shilton, Akindo, and a lot of guys that could do some managing if they had to. You know, when you start giving him a lot of options, I don't know. I mean, maybe with all the brain power and brain trust around there, it would help and he could do those things. But there would be a concern there, I think, that, you know, you're asking for creativity from a guy that we have not seen creativity from in 6 years. I feel even if you're a big Matheny fan, I think that's a fair assessment. I don't think there's been a whole lot of creativity there. So, you know, that's my feeling on that. I think that if they could get a Addison Reed in the back of the bullpen, they'd be probably pretty good. If, and especially if they're willing to pull a trigger somewhere in the middle of the season on a need that they have, you know, whether it's in June or July, if they see that there's something they need, if they'll be aggressive and go out and get it, maybe even before the deadline, maybe you set the market, then they've got a better chance. But right now, you know, I think they're, you know, a team that's going to be in the hunt. I think they're going to be a team that's better than they were last year. And, that one or more pieces could just put them over the top. And it's a little frustrating that we haven't just seen them do that. You know, I get waiting for the best deal, waiting for all this stuff, but there just comes a time where is it worth saving $5 million over 3 years, you know, or whatever it might be, just so you're not the first one out there signing somebody. Just, you know, get pen, get paper, get this done, and worry about the repercussions a little bit later. I think it's too late to, I don't know. There's a lot of bodies still out there, and I'm not saying that the Cardinals are doomed because they haven't done anything. They obviously can still do anything they want to, but it feels like they're just waiting. Most teams are just waiting now just to wait, trying to wait out for the very best deal. And sometimes you just, you know, it's worth spending a little extra money to get it, to get the job done.
Well, and you're exactly right. Just, I mean, I trust the organization, and I mean, I feel like they're going to do the right thing. And I think that there's definite transition period going on right now. I think that, I think there is a window with these guys, with, you know, Carpenter and Ozuna is added to this, this core that they have now. They haven't significantly raised their payroll from last year. They have improved, but you're right. Probably saying the things they did was probably fan servicey about how aggressive they were going to be. And we know that they have been because they've been involved in everything. But if we're having this conversation next year, that's not going to be a very good look. Mm-hmm. Especially with the money, the influx of money that they're about to have coming in. So I'm not saying to rush out and just make any deals. But if they don't make anything else and they're within a few games or could put a division away and fail to make a move at that point, that's not going to look very good.
Adam, any thoughts on this before we leave it alone?
I mostly agree on that. That's a pretty valid concern that you had as far as, you know, giving Matheny a platoon, because it definitely usually ends up in one guy getting buried, and I don't really have an answer for you on that. No. It's just, you know, looking at the numbers, it looks like, hey, this would work really well, and so that's why I brought that up. But yeah, I mean, that's a fair concern for sure. But yeah, as far as like going over the top to add pieces, I completely agree. I think you saw Mosaic like tempering expectations, because they're probably at this point making their offer to people hoping that they get somebody, and not going above, or maybe going, you know, not going above by very much of what they expect a guy to be worth. And that does get somewhat frustrating at times. You know, I personally wouldn't like to see them give extra years to people, and maybe, mm-hmm. A lot of times that's what it takes. But yeah, if it's, you know, if you're giving a guy an extra $5 million a year, as long as you're not, you know, as long as you're not looking at that luxury tax threshold, I don't know. I don't see why not.
Yeah. And that's how I feel. I honestly wouldn't blink an eye at any dollar amount that they gave anybody if it was for only 3 years. You know what I mean? That's just how I feel. Cause I think you're in a good spot, especially with the, like I said, I never like to spend somebody else's money or even claim to know that I know what's going on in that situation. But I would rather go $35 million for 3 years than spread that out over seven. You know, one of those things. And I know that's stupid comparison, but if they have the money, they could do that and they could buy it out. And if it's the years, well, then that's the one thing you'd walk away from. But I'm not convinced that you couldn't pay over market slot and for the AAV and to shorten it by 2 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, and I get the players are holding out because they want the security, and especially with the big, you know, free agents markets in the next year or so. But yeah, you feel like there's some point in time where you could pay to overcome that. But who knows? We'll see. I mean, like I said, there's still lots of names out there, so.
And I know that we're about an hour now, but like in a situation, I understand that Boris is doing the talking for him, but, and Arrieta is one of those guys that I could think would take a lot of money for 3 years. You know, that's what makes me think that's an interesting situation, which I do think the Cardinals were only brought up into that deal is to get the value from the Cubs higher. You know, so I can't see a Darvish taking a 3 year deal. Arrieta, I could.
Yeah.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, I'm just saying, not necessarily, you know, he came out and said that he wanted six or seven, but what, the way that I look at it, he would be the guy that I could see taking the, you know, 28 to 30 million for 3 years as opposed to spread out over six to seven. You know what I mean? Just to have that high dollar amount. I think that would be appeasing to him, not necessarily the years. I think the dollar figure that he would get to sign and make would make I think he would be the one that would take that as opposed to security in a Darvish.
The only problem is for some of these guys, and maybe especially Arrieta, who's, I think, what, 34 or so, this is their last chance to really get the big payday, if you will. And, yeah, that's extra rent. You're right. I mean, raising the AAV is good, but, you know, stretching that out over 6 years, you know, it's more overall money. And if they don't think they can get another contract that's going to make up the difference, then, you know, they may hold out. Now, again, you may wind up holding out so long that you don't get the contract ever, but, I think that's part of it. I think they know that, and especially the way the markets are now, once you get in those, you know, mid 30s, you're not going to cash in more than once, most likely.
Sure. Yeah. That's a good point.
All right. Well, we have gone about an hour, and so we may not do as many of these favorite Cardinals as we thought we would, but let's do a few of them and chop them out of the way. If you haven't been listening since the season's been over, maybe you're just tuning in because we've got our special guest star this time around, which is fair. I can understand that. You know, he's got a following. So Alan and I put out the form at the beginning of the, before the end of the season, asking you to rank your top 15 Cardinals. We took that, we put the points, and we've ranked them by point totals. We've gone through everybody that's less than 100 points. The last couple guys we talked about in the last show were Jack Clark and Jose Aquindo. So we're going to hit into the triple digits now. And the first guy that reaches that mark with 106 points is World Series MVP shortstop David Eckstein. Adam, you got any thoughts on David Eckstein?
Oh man, I love that guy. He was so much fun. It was whenever I was in high school, we used to once a year we would hold it. It was like a fundraiser for our baseball team, and we would get to play a game in Busch Stadium. And I remember they always took us through the player parking lot, and I remember thinking, who drives that piece of crap Explorer that makes millions of dollars? And I found out later on it was David Eckstein, and that was hilarious to me, because this was the year after he was the World Series MVP and won that. I don't know if it was a Camaro or whatever that he won.
Yeah, something like that.
But that was always hilarious to me. But he's definitely one of those guys that's a fan favorite. And didn't, you know, it's weird how he could succeed at shortstop without much of an arm. But he made it work, and it was cool. And he was so much fun to watch. He was a little like spark plug type of player. I liked him a lot.
He fits that Cardinals persona well. You know, I mean, he fit right in right away. It was funny because everybody I grew up with are Cardinals fans, and I'll never forget that, whenever the trade was made, they were probably in about June of that first year, and they're just like, they'll never win with him because he just can't get the ball over to first. Robin, you said that, that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, you know, they were all over it. But yeah, he, as far as the gritty guys, he was probably, he fit right in with the line of, we could probably get about 15 to 20 deep of guys that are, you know, basically that same mold.
Which is what helped him. I mean, as much as I like David Eckstein, and he's actually probably one of the rare athletes that I would like to meet him and his wife about as equally, mm-hmm. maybe more so his wife, given that his wife is the voice of Ahsoka Tano mm-hmm. on Clone Wars and Rebels and has that Star Wars connection. But Scott Rowland was the MVP of that World Series. It was just the fact that David Eckstein had, you know, a good last couple of games, and he had he was the short, scrappy guy that got, you know, there was a good story there. And I'm not going to say that he didn't earn that award. I just felt like Scott Rowland was better in that series. Again, you're not going to complain too much because you won the World Series, so who cares who's MVP? But Eckstein's a good guy. Always seemed to be you're right, a fan favorite, and a guy that we have all those, you know, gritty hard worker types. But he had a little bit more talent and a little bit more ability than some of the others like we've talked about in the past, like Bo Hart, Joe McEwing, stuff like that. He was a step up from those guys. And then when he left, you know, it was just kind of a rotating pit at shortstop for quite some time. So, you know, he held it together for what, 2 or 3 years in St. Louis, which was pretty nice.
Yeah, it's probably pretty easy to play short when you don't have to move to your right with Roland playing there. You know, that's one thing I always think about. I was like, you know, that dude covered some major ground. So, and then, but Roland was not only the MVP in the World Series, it should have been. He was the MVP through that playoff, I thought. This is about Eckstein.
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, we'll get to Roland at some point in time. We hadn't done that yet. But, yeah, and he had his best years in St. Louis. I mean, 3 years in St. Louis, but he hit .297, hit a .732 OPS, which was better than any other location that he had. And, of course, you know, had 13 home runs even. So he had a little bit of pop every once in a while. Just enough to – what was it? Wasn't it him that hit the grand slam? Because it was Pujols was in the dugout. I'm trying to remember the story, and somebody who was coming up after Eckstein had a bat in their hands, and Pujols took it out of their hands and said, "Game's over here." And then Eckstein hit like a grand slam or something like that. And I might be mixing my stories, but I vaguely remember that. I remember the story of Pujols taking the bat out of somebody's hands because the guy at the plate was going to win the ball game right for him right then, and sure enough, it did. So, anyway. Random stories. That's what we're here to do. That's what we do.
Don't let truth get in the way of a good story. Exactly. Come on.
He did hit a walk-off grand slam in 05.
See?
So.
I'm not entirely making things up, I don't think. not entirely. Not intentionally, at least. Alright, well, we move up to our next one who had 125 points, and this is, well, about a similar, you know, middle infield again, but a little bit different career. We're talking about Red Shandies, Hall of Famer, and a guy that has been with the Cardinals for all but a handful of his now, 72 years in baseball. Red Allen is just an amazing story, I think, when you look at it.
I completely agree. This is the one, these are the guys that, I just about said something before we started the show of, I almost hate getting these names because I just don't do them justice. You know, even with anybody on our show or anybody on my top 100 list with Redbird Daily, I kind of hate getting the guys like this because I just can't say enough good things about them. I just don't feel like I do them justice. This was my grandfather's favorite, and because he was the manager in the years when he would take my uncle and the rest of the family to go. He was the manager of those times. You're right. I mean, to still be kicking at, you know, almost 95 years old, it's pretty impressive, and I don't think he misses much. So, the longevity with the ball club is pretty impressive.
Yeah, he'll be 95 on February 2nd, so he's just, you know, a couple of weeks away. And, you know, Adam, I don't think he made it to spring training last year. I know there was some talk about that, but I mean, he's still at the ballpark. He's still a very active person, at least what it seems like for a guy that's, 95.
Yeah, that's, and for me, like, it's always been so fun. Like, he's been a part of, like, the opening day ceremonies where they bring out all the, Hall of Famers. And, I don't know. That's how I know him, obviously, right. But, or you guys too, but, it's just so fun to have him around and all the former Cardinals. And it's just, it's cool that, you know, you don't really see other organizations do that very much. So, I don't know. He's got a lot of fans, and it's, I don't know. Has he ever coached in any? He was a manager for him at some point, wasn't he?
Oh yeah. He's managed, he has the most wins of any manager except for Tony La Russa, in Cardinal history.
Okay.
He managed from 65 to 76. And then he had some interim work in 80. And in fact, in 90, I vaguely remember.
Oh, yeah.
Taking over for Joe Torre, in 90. the very end of the season. He went 13-11 in those 24 games. So, but yeah, I mean, he was the manager of the 67 team and the 68 team that won and went to the World Series. And still is, it's kind of like you said, it's the Cardinal organization feels like it has the ability to tie into its history and make it relevant to today. I mean, these are the guys, guys like Adam Wainwright or guys like Colton Wong shouldn't really know Red Shandies. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, they should, maybe they have heard a little bit about him, but these guys have direct, knowledge of him, and they know what he knows. He's shared their wisdom. He's shared his insights with them, and the Cardinals are, not saying that other teams don't, but they seem to be able to tap into that better than maybe most, to be able to really keep the Cardinal way, as it were, alive through this, unbroken chain of people that, and being that they've had a number of long-lived stars, Musial in his 90s, Gibson's been around, and Brock, and obviously, Red, like we said, 95, that's helped a lot too, but it's great to see them out interacting with today's players, so that connection is there.
And he's from around, I believe he's from somewhere in Illinois over, is it Germantown?
Yep,
that he's from?
Germantown.
Okay. Yeah, so that's cool. I know some people from Germantown that talk about him. That's how I knew that, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, his granddaughter was around in St. Louis. Is at a couple of our early blogger events as well, because she's on Twitter and things of that nature, and was joining us there. So it was kind of interesting to to have that connection as well. I mean, it's just it's kind of cool, I think, for the most part. All right, now we continue up our list at 136 points. It's the speedster from the 80s, Vince Coleman. Adam, what do you think about Vince?
Less than you guys, probably.
I had him in my top 100 for our list. As a matter of fact, he was 100 in our list.
There you go.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, I mean, the 80s teams are very intriguing to me, the whole defense and speed thing. That's not something that I've really seen. And so I always like to go back and look at numbers for that. And 100 stolen bases in three straight seasons that he had is nuts. Like, I can't even fathom that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even imagine watching a team like that. That would be insane.
It was awesome because Whitey was a stud. Herzog was a stud on this deal because he made the whole team speed and defense, and he did it on the fastest surface, their turf. I mean, it would get like 160 degrees in the summer. The ball just bounced off of it and just ran. So if they hit a ball in the gap, they could just run forever. And he just set the lineup like that. It was amazing with them though. In 95, they clicked when he was with the big league club. And that was a good team. But they really put it together when he made the team out of spring training, which was only supposed to be temporary. They were like, hey, don't get too comfortable. This is going to be a short stay. You still have things to do. It was Louisville at the time. You'll be heading back to Louisville. Well, then, we go how you go. That's how it started with him. And then, ultimately won the rookie of the year and they go to the World Series, and it's a lot of people that are well read in that series say they win it fairly easy if it wasn't for his injury. He was that pivotal to the team, but yeah, it's amazing. When you look at those stats and you see that, the 100 stolen bases, when you don't see guys get over 50 and 60, Gordon gets 60 now, and it's quite the accomplishment. You're just like, man, Coleman was something else. I mean, if he got on, he was the third base and they would score. It was pretty impressive, and they put the whole lineup together to fit the ball club. It was just a perfect storm of events how that roster worked out.
And I, even though I lived through that time, with my cane and everything, But we didn't get to see games very much. With the broadcast not being the way they were, but still just knowing, like Alan was saying, that, you know, the speed that they had. And of course, the game was a bit different, you know, the balk rule was different, and it wasn't as called as much, and pitchers hadn't developed the slide step, and things of that nature. Things that really that team, that Cardinal team, most likely, you know, changed the rules of the game to some degree. Not as extensively as Gibson did with his, you know, 1.12, but still, did impact things. But yeah, just having him and you know, it never really developed after, St. Louis, obviously. Went to New York, had problems in New York. I'd have to pull up to see where he went after that. It seems like he just bounced around a little bit to finish up. But, you know, where is he now? I think he's with San Francisco as a coach. It's a little surprising that, as we talk about the Cardinal history, that was, I know they have done a little bit with, you know, obviously as Ozzy and Willie are definitely in there, but, and I think Vince may have come some, but it's a little surprising that they haven't, you know, they didn't snatch him up to teach. But then again, I don't know that you could teach what he did. I mean, maybe you can, maybe you can't, but some of that was just, you know, just amazing speed that he had, in a game that allowed for that.
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. Team is fun to watch.
Yep. All right. Well, let's call this one the last one then. I hate that we only did four, but, we're getting late on time and Adam's got, you know, he's got to be rested for tomorrow's, grueling interview sessions that he's got to, you know, hold the lights on, you know, all these guys and make them tell the right answers. So, our last guy with 139 points is another guy from the 80s, another guy that we probably, you know, can't necessarily give justice to, but, Bob Forsch, the only Cardinal to throw two no-hitters, and like I said, a mainstay of those 80s teams. Adam, like you said, it's a team that came around before you did. But I mean, do you have any thoughts on Bob Forsch?
Not really, no, to be honest with you. I don't have much knowledge of the guy. I'm not as up with my Cardinals history as I probably should be.
Here's the thing too about that. He was a stud, and he would be one of those, if he was still with us, would be a bigger, would probably get more play now because of, I think that the fan base, including me, and this may be a terrible point to make, on those late 70s, 80s teams and the good teams that he went through, I mean, he was in St. Louis till 88 or 89, I believe. So he was through, you know, three World Series teams, you know, one World Series winner, was really good. But he was overshadowed by whatever else they had. You know, even on the 85 team, or, you know, you had Andujar on two of the World Series teams. You had Worrell on the 85 team. You had, you know, even the lineups that we had talked about, you know, the speed. I mean, you go, think about it. You go Vince, you go Ozzy, you go McGee, you go Clark, you know, on the 87 teams. They were really stacked, and Forsch kind of gets pushed to the back burner a little bit, but, he was a legit stud. He was funny. He's one of those that, one of my favorite things to write about. I had written about this last year and I felt like I did a pretty poor job. I'd almost like to address it. You know, he was a converted infielder and he just one of those to where the leagues figured him out and he just couldn't hit. Well, then, you know, he came in and, you know, became a stud, you know, he was a great athlete, first of all. That was what it would, whenever you would see his starts, that's what they would talk about the whole time. But, you know, come to find out when you dig a little bit deeper, I mean, he was a third baseman at Arizona State, you know, good player, you know, converted infielder, you know, just, and there's a lot you can say about him. Like I said, it's one of those I probably don't do justice, but, I think that if that team wasn't so electric and had so many of those high profile guys, he would probably be better received, and I think that he's getting some of that notoriety back posthumously, unfortunately.
Well, and you know, he was elected to the Cardinal Hall of Fame in 2015, went in with the class with a good class of Ted Simmons, Kurt Flood, and George Kissel. which you can't argue that when you're talking Cardinal history. 163 and 127, as a Cardinal, 19 shutouts, 382 FIP, 367 ERA. Like you say, it's, you know, two no-hitters, and a guy, you know, won the Silver Slugger twice. That's his only awards, actually. You know, never an All-Star, never in the voting for Cy Young or anything like that. So you're right, just a dependable, solid guy. I don't know. I, you know, and again, and a name that we knew a lot of, and so unfortunately he passed, you know, just days after throwing out a first pitch in the 2011 World Series. So yeah, I think it's a guy that, yeah, if you watch that 80s team, you knew Bob Forrest, you appreciated Bob Forrest, and it's probably a guy that, you know, as good as the numbers are, probably doesn't really show the impact, to Cardinal history.
Well put.
So basically the Lance Lynn of the 80s.
That's why I was going to say that. I promise you I was going to say that. I was like, well, I would put him comparably about like Lance Lynn. Yeah, I swear I was going to say that.
That's probably fair. I mean, I feel like, yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like Forrest was a little bit better, a little bit more known, but yeah, when you look at the fact no All-Star appearances, you know, I think Forrest was probably more the two guy than the three, but yeah, I think that's a fairly solid comparison. If Lynn had pitched a little bit longer in St. Louis, they might really have gone, well. So yeah, there you go. You don't even have to know anything about these teams, guys. Adam, you're just pulling it out right there. You're doing well. So, all right. Well, we do hope you have a good time at Winterworm. Like I said, we look forward to, reading you there. Anything you want to, you know, plug or talk about before we wrap it up?
No, I mean, I appreciate you having me on here. This is fun. This one is on a, short list of podcasts that I listen to every episode. So it's cool to be a part of. I appreciate it.
Oh, and we appreciate you listening too. And of course we always enjoy it when you and Rusty get a bird law, recorded. Those are always a lot of fun to listen to as well. So, if you haven't subscribed to Bird Law, you should go over there and do that and rate and review that. And while you're doing it, you can rate and review us as well. Alan, you got anything going?
No, Adam, thanks for coming on board, and have a good time tomorrow. I'm excited to hear how things go. I really am.
Yeah, I think it will be a lot of fun. So, you know, I don't have anything because I can't seem to get around to writing either.
hey, that so. It's this is normally writing season, and the slow off season's really hurt a lot of the websites.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got, you know, starting to work up the Playing Pepper series, which will be the 10th year I've done it, but it, you know, taking a look at the other teams in the league, but without having, I mean, you know, without, you got the show kind of to tell you whatever, but you know, you can only write, they need to get a closer or they need to do this or they shouldn't do that, or, you know, everybody's kind of rehashed that, you know, 15 times between now and then. It'd be nice if they, you know, did something to at least change the conversation, but hopefully they will soon. And hopefully, you know, usually there's plenty of stuff that comes out of this weekend that'll give you something to think about. And I look forward to hearing that coverage. So, for Adam and Alan, we'll talk at you later. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.